cliffcentral.com.
Business Masterclass, I'm Adrian Groenewald, and with me, Louis Groenewald. And the first half hour of this hour Business Masterclass is a business skills conversation. And today's a very legal one in association with USB Ed. We've got Jonathan Goldberg in to help us understand this theme. Well, that's a heck of a broad one, and we're going to zoom in on labor, but it's litigation and dispute resolution. What to do when it goes wrong? Well, that's when you call the lawyers in anyway, when things go wrong. But what to do when things go wrong? So we're just going to give it a bit of an angle. We've got Jonathan with us. Thank you, Jonathan.
Good afternoon to you and your listeners.
Good to have you with us. If you can shift this way so that I can see your face, these awful microphones that block. There we go. Well, it's great to have you with us. And the second half hour, we'll interview someone who's running his own practice. It's the SME interview. So he's running his small business, Ryan Tucker of RM Tucker Attorneys. So we'll have him in the studio and literally just talk about his life as an SME. When did he become a lawyer? Why? And what he's learned from a business point of view, but also a bit of an extension, practical extension of our first half-hour conversation. So, Jonathan, we can't touch on everything in this business skills conversation when it comes to law. So we kind of need to prioritize. And the first thing we're going to do is go very much in the direction of labor. So you know, litigation and dispute resolution when it comes to labor issues. But my question is, what crosses the paths of business leaders most when it comes to labor disputes and resolution? What are the stuff that they deal with mostly?
I think the most common thing that you deal with as a business leader is dismissals. Mm. So our law is quite structured and has been for many years, even before 1995, have been structured very formally in regard to dismissing of employees. Mm. Where in other jurisprudence around the world, you have a much simpler maybe regime of dismissals. Our dismissal regime is quite technical. Mm. What we tried to do in 95 was make it less technical, but I think a lot of organizations have moved the times. So if you talk about dispute resolution systems, we have a body called the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, set up via negotiation in NEDLAC in 1994-95.
That's the CCMA as we know it.
The CCMA as we know it, which deals with all these disputes. And it's a world-class organization. The real question is, what do employers do before that? How do dismissals take place at the workplace?
Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, what are the main reasons and causes for these disputes in general? I mean, I guess there's a reason why it goes to the CCMA. I want to fire you, I fire you, and you tell me, well, you shouldn't have fired me.
Now, I always believe that if I wanted to fire you, I should just pay you, and you should be able to go, we should be able to agree, because if I really don't want you, then there's a problem in any case. But let's come back to the law. So in 1995, what the negotiations attempted to do was bring in a much simpler process of dismissals. So effectively, they said, well, if you want to dismiss an employee, here are some 8 steps to follow. But there'll be a big brother watching, and that's the CCMA. So the CCMA was set up for easy access for a person who was dismissed, but they try to simplify the internal process of dismissals. But practically what we have today in organizations, including small businesses, we have this over-technical nature to a dismissal of the employee. Mm. And really it's about the substantive reason. And have we warned you, or have you done something so serious that we need to dismiss you on the spot? So we need to actually get back to basics internally within organizations. So if you come late, you need to get some type of warning. If you then do it again, you need to get a more progressive warning, and then eventually you can be dismissed even for late coming. But we battle with those simple steps, and we overcomplicate it. So to some extent, we get too technical internally. Remember, there's Big Brother watching the CCMA. You can refer your matters without any cost to you, and that's the difference. You can got a free access to the CCMA, and I think that's where some employers gripe. They're saying, well, you know, Johnny's taking me to the CCMA. I fired him for theft. Why is he taking me there? That's the issue that employers battle with. Mm. But more problematic for my mind is how we dismiss people, because I think we need to simplify our processes internally. I explain it the following way in South Africa. Labor law. Employers are actually too kind. So they do nothing until one day, in Leon Schuster's language, they're just sick and tired. I could use a different language, expressive term, but they're sick and tired and they want to fire Johnny on the spot. But there's no record of wrongdoing in the file, just a little note of what's going on, this is what's happening. So I think South African businesses need to get back to basics in respect to dismissals. I'm not even trying to sort out government dismissals, because that's another nightmare in regard to the time process and technical nature that we've sort of lumped ourselves into. We need to get out of this hole. Say, guys, here are the rules. If you breach the rules, this is the one-step kind of approach, or two-step approach, or three-step approach, and off we go.
You're not a lawyer from the U.S., but I mean, we're here in the U.S., you can just fire. As opposed to in South Africa, it leans more towards, more favorably towards the employee than the employer.
Do you want me to speak about Trump? Maybe it's going to get easier to fire in the U.S. under Trump.
Probably, I mean, talk that's about what he did.
Well. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, exactly, the TV hospitality show. But if you just, I always try, like, maybe it's, but a lot of us lawyers are logical. So let me come back to a bit of logic here. Why would I want to get rid of you if you're really good, logically? I don't really want to get rid of you if you're not coming to work on time, if you're not good, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you're a threat to me. So I had that as a, in my corporate career. Somehow a manager wanted to get rid of me.
And again, if you're very that good, then effectively that organization is not looking after you. There should be another.
Well, it turned thing. Against her, and I got that job, strange enough, after a while. So, yes.
And that's the issue. If you're really that good, you're going to pop out the end of the system. And you can't beat the system every year. Actually, in 30 years of labor law, I've never seen an individual beat the system. They think they can. They might win one
season. That's the entire system, yeah.
They can never beat the system. You can never go against it. Either you're good or you're not good. That's ultimately the real problem. So in America, yes, you might have much easier dismissal laws, but we try to simplify the laws in 1995. But employers are not following the simplified internal processes.
Why not?
They've got these big up departments. They've got this big structure. And again, I think a lot of managers are not inclined to want to do discipline. So they do nothing, and then pressure, and then they do something.
But it's because of ignorance. They think it's very complex, don't they? And then they don't do nothing, and then it becomes even more complex and sensitive.
If I really put my finger on the real issue, I think the average manager doesn't want to discipline. They want to be the good guy or good girl, and they don't want to discipline. But then it erupts. Then 5 minutes becomes 10 minutes, becomes 15 minutes, becomes half an hour late. We all have traffic problems. We all have the same restraints of getting into work, getting out of work, and we're subject to the same discipline. But the average South African manager needs to step up to the plate and say, listen here, we need to start managing. Because unless you manage in an orderly environment, it becomes chaos.
Louis?
Remember, Arden, we're doing leadership consultation, one large mining company, and they were so wary at the middle management level of applying discipline and the tremendous negative implication it has. Arden, what I like what Jonathan's saying is, it becomes over-tactical. In that sense, it breaks down trust. What you're saying, if you get down to basics and the spirit of it, is something different altogether. When this came out, legislation, remember, some people resisted it very strongly. But those who embrace it, our experience has been, they can handle it and they find it becomes, there's a lot of reason behind it. It leads to fairness, etc. And the good will come out and the bad should be separated as well. So I just like the fact that you say when it becomes so tactical, be careful because you take trust out of it. You say one thing, but you mean something
else. But also as a leader or manager, you know, confront it head on early on and then you avoid
That's
all
right.
the complications.
That's right.
How much of this starts with the employment contract, Jonathan?
I'm a big employment contract fan. So, I believe contracts need to be clearly stipulated up front, and we need to put as much in that contract as possible. But the real question is, you should also be going through that contract with you. For instance, most people sign restraints when they take on employment. So if I was advising this organization, I'd say, well, sign the top people, the real key people, up in some type of restraint. Again, the question is, how enforceable is that? So I want to sign you up with a restraint that's going to be enforceable so I can contain you for 6 months if you leave here in a certain area for a certain period of time. So I'm a big fan of contracts. I'm a big fan of actually telling people what the rules are. Remember, if the rule is, if you come late for work, you get a verbal warning, then you get a written warning, then you get a final written warning, then you're dismissed, then everyone knows the rule. Communicate the rule and let's apply the rule. It doesn't apply only to you. It applies to you and everyone else. So what we have in a lot of organizations is inconsistency, a different set of rules applying to a different set of organizational people within the organization, friends, colleagues, girlfriends, boyfriends, and the whole lot. So I think one's just got to be careful about consistency. And if you look at the best organizations in South Africa, they apply those rules and regulations from top to bottom. Actually, they're tougher on the top because you should know better than they're on the bottom and of the organization. I think that produces fairness. The one thing we've lost in this country as well is the ability to communicate with our employees. Don't have to always communicate through a third party. They are employees. I'm paying them.
Especially in the mining industry, yeah.
Correct. I mean, I was sitting in a mining in Darba, an American consultant said to the mining CEOs, when did you give your right away not to speak to your employees? Effectively, that's crazy.
That's what I like about Sibanye. They've taken that right back, and it's been tough, but they've done it. So also the employment contract thing, when you fire someone and it goes to the CCMA, and we'll get to the CCMA in a moment, then is there a process that takes you back to the employment contract to first say, okay, you were employed correctly. So you are a fan of saying if that base is right, then it's going to set a lot of things right.
In South African labor law, you can dismiss someone for three reasons. Misconduct, where you commit something, you commit misconduct, which is your fault. Incapacity, where you either underperform because you don't have the ability or you're too sick to perform. And the third reason for dismissal is operational requirements, so-called retrenchments that you talked about early on. So those are the three grounds for dismissal, and each of them have a different procedure and a set of rules. Misconducts are probably 95% of the cases you deal with. And there we come back to not necessarily the contract, sometimes the contract, but specifically what was the rule? In other words, was it known? Was the consequence known? And has it been consistently applied? Are the real big issues that apply in a disciplinary case? And I'm saying, I keep on telling people, we don't have to be rocket science. I can get rid of a third of your workforce. Just apply timekeeping consistently, and a third of the people are gone within 6 months. And there's no CCMA who's going to overturn that, provided the rules were clear, known to everyone. People then were disciplined. And, of course, remember, discipline's trying to correct your actions. So it's not like a shouting. It's just saying, please, will you get your act together? I want to get you together, because I come back to the Trump issue. We don't want to fire you if you're good, but we want you to be good. So there's no CCMA that's going to overturn that, provided your rules and regulations are clear and they consistently apply. Mm.
Then you have the Praveen situation, to use an analogy, where I actually want you gone, so I send someone in to witch hunt, to find something that will place you in one of those three categories, I guess preferably the first category. And that's where, you know, when the hidden motive is there. It's not really one of those three motives, but I'm going to find a way to place you in there somewhere. And that's complex.
Well, I think the problem that we sit with both in government and private sector, if I really look at it, and I was at an organization this morning, we've got to be careful that we don't trap ourselves by our own policies and procedures. So the preferential procurement framework that's put out by government, the Public Finance Administration Act, are very complex pieces of documents. So potentially, if you put a commission of inquiry onto a senior person, you might find some fault in terms of not following the actual act in its entirety. But then if that's the case, then we've got to change the act to allow government and government officials to make decisions, to collect taxes, for instance, that are easily usable without having the book thrown at you when you're not there or when someone's going for a witch hunt. It's exactly back to policies and procedures for companies.
Mm.
You know, let's take a policy in regard to gifts, the time of giving. You know, I like gifts too. It's a time of giving, and we get gifts, etc., etc. Hopefully you guys also get gifts here at the radio station. You know, you must get gifts.
We'll try.
Well, listeners, please help presenters. They do a very good job. But so what's the policy in respect to giving? It doesn't have to be a five-page document, one-liner. If you get a gift, disclose it. Simple. Why do we need a 10-page document around gifts?
Different price brackets and all that nonsense.
Just disclose it. Mm. And let someone in the organization take, because it's all about disclosure. So I went on a hunting trip. The rule is I must disclose it. Poof. So we know where there's any undue influence in the particular workplace. So again, it's just an example, and maybe a very simple example of how we overcomplicate our lives and our own policies and procedures.
Okay.
Go see the average corporate policy and procedure around corporate gifts. I promise you, not shorter than 5 pages. And who reads 5 pages? Who reads that?
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. So let's talk CCMA for just a few minutes. Some say, and maybe in the past this was a term that moved around in the legal fraternity. CCMA stands for Come Collect Your Monetary Award. Kind of an indication that it leans very much towards the employee that was fired or that was in trouble. But when I engage corporates, I often see the top HR execs or say, I've never lost a case in CCMA. My feeling is that the individual, man or woman in the street, who takes the corporate to CCMA loses more often than the other way around. How is that balance at the moment?
Well, first of all, there are two stages in CCMAs. One is conciliation, where I come in as the conciliator and I try to settle between the parties. And there I can only really get a settlement out the employer, because both people tell versions. I'm not sure which version is true. They're not subject to criminal prosecution and cross-examination, which we've seen on TV lately. And they're two versions, and they're generally completely opposite. So I can go to the employer and say, well, there's a hassle factor here. Let's settle this matter. I have no decisive powers. And as an employer, if you have a good case, then don't settle. At arbitration, the next level, then I listen to the evidence, and based on the evidence, I make a decision. And again, you must be a very stupid employer if you're going to arbitration with a bad case, because I'm going to adjudicate as the external arbitrators whether it's fair or not. So that's why you'd either settle, and therefore you should have more employers winning at arbitration, unless they're completely stupid and actually go to arbitration to lose.
Okay, so logic dictates that you should have more wins.
Correct.
Okay.
And again, so people are very critical of the CCMA, but internationally, if you benchmark the CCMA internationally, it's a fantastic organization. It works extremely well. And yes, there are flaws in the system, but a system that's seen hundreds and hundreds of thousands of disputes each year and managing throughout the breadth of South Africa, all over the provinces and the outlying areas. And remember, everyone's got a right to go to the CCMA at any level of employment. And so it's a big, big army that they've got to gauge. It's a big system that they've got to run. And I think they do it exceptionally well. I think we can be proud of the CCMA. Of course, what I'd like to see at the CCMA is where there are frivolous referrals. So in other words, referrals that have got no real merit. I'd like to see awards against parties who take those particular cases or defend the cases that are of not merit, because we're wasting the taxpayers' money. Remember, the system is free.
Mm.
But if we've got this big brother or big sister watching this, then we need to free up our internal processes. So we need to free up internally to say, let's get dismissal simpler, let's get this sorted out, and let's do it much quicker and internally inside the organization. Because remember, the key to a dismissal is not procedural fairness. It's not how long you sat for. It's substantive fairness. Has the person breached the rule on the balance of probability? It's a much lesser test at labor law. Is the rule known?
Mm.
Is it a reasonable rule? Is it consistently applied, and is the penalty appropriate? So it's a very simple step-by-step approach that's put out in Schedule 8 of the Code of Good Practice of the Labor Relations Act.
Okay, representation. The corporate can take their lawyers. Can I, as an individual, take my lawyer?
And that's why the construction of the Act is so good, because at arbitrations for dismissals, effectively you're not allowed lawyers. So it's
neither party.
Neither party, the company representative and a trade union, or employer organization or employee organization. So it's meant to be quicker, cheaper, and more efficient. Okay. So again, you know, I think the construction of the system is good. The question is, how do we utilize it? You know, for litigation, for me, the longer we wait, the worse it gets for me. So I do dismiss Ryan today, and I've gone to adjudicate this matter in a year's time. You know, I can't remember what happened a week ago. Forget about 12 months ago. So I always tell employers that your chances of success get worse the longer you wait. Mm. In a modern system, you should be hearing that case externally within 2 or 3 weeks. If we really had collective relationships with trade unions, we'd have done a deal when the Act allows you to do that. Outside the CCMA, to say, listen here, we dismiss Ryan, but within 2 weeks, an external arbitrator comes in who knows our mind, for instance, knows what the requirements are, knows the rule, and rules in a quick adjudication process the parties are trained on and do it. So within 2 weeks, you know whether Ryan's dismissal is fair or unfair. And that's not a problem. It's not a problem to take Ryan back after 2 weeks if he made a mistake. And again, that decision doesn't bind us. We then say, well, what is the rule? And management makes the rules.
What about the cost?
Well, again, the cost there, if you look at the cost, if hypothetically in a collective arrangement, if the cost was the company bore the cost, that cost would be far cheaper than sending the HR director to the CCMA for conciliation, to arbitration. It would do a lot. And you can negotiate the cost with your particular trade union. So it would do a lot to help the collective relationship. And I'm disappointed that collective parties haven't done more of this contracting out of the Act, because that's what the Act intended, that parties would come together and say, what's a system that suits us? I take senior executives. To my mind, senior executives should not be subject to the CCMA or labor law. We should contract that to say, listen here, if I dismiss you, we go to private arbitration, and we then determine contractually what the costs are.
Mm.
Why? Because that's efficient. You don't have to go find a lawyer, go through a whole particular process. We can go to arbitration. You can get your lawyer representative, and we get this matter over within 3 or 4 weeks of your dismissal. Because if you are dismissed, and you've got to wait 6 months to have your matter heard, that preoccupies your mind as well as the dismissed employee.
But you're paid anyway for those 6 months off.
Well, again, not in the real world. In the real world, when you're dismissed, you shouldn't get paid anymore. So, you know, again, and in government as well, if you are dismissed, you don't get paid. The real problem in government, they still have appeal. And the Act doesn't require you to have an appeal. There's no appeal process required in terms of South African labor law. Why? Because big brother or big sister, the CCMA, is watching.
Okay, we can look at CCMA a little bit more, but I just want to open up the floor. What else would be good to know for employers in terms of it's our theme today, which is litigation and dispute resolution, what to do when it goes wrong. We focus very much on labor. We focus very much on CCMA, maybe. What else must employers be aware of, Jonathan? Give them quick some tips.
Well, going back to the original subject, which is litigation and external, I think, again, similar to what I'm saying, that parties should contract the LRA. I think in a lot of disputes internally, between commercial disputes and civil disputes, we should have much more utilization of arbitration. So people should be contracting much quicker to much quicker adjudication, because, again, the CCMA is fairly efficient, but there's a backlog of up to 12 months in the Labor Court now. So if you're taking it further from the CCMA to the Labor Court, the Labor Appeal Court, all the way to the Constitutional Court, there's a backlog there, which is also not good for efficient adjudication. But coming back to even civil matters and damages, it'd be much easier to have a quicker agreed-on process. The problem with private arbitrations and private agreements, the parties have got to agree. But I don't think there's enough training and mindset to say, if you've got a dispute, you don't necessarily need to go to court. I was dealing with a matter last week. It's a defamation case, and they've been at this for 5 years, these parties. They should have agreed, gone to arbitration within the month, and had it done 5 years ago. It would have cost them a tenth of what it's cost them now, and they would have got settlement one way or the other for a particular matter that is nearly 5 years old in respect of postponements, etc., etc.
Okay. All right. We're going to interview a SME owner in the law space in a moment. But Jonathan, you're going to stay with us to maybe mentor this guy next to you.
Thanks, Jonathan.
But Jonathan is representing today Jonathan Goldberg, USB Ed. But you run your own practice?
Correct, yeah. We run a consultancy in the labor law space and been around for about 30 years in South Africa. Okay. In all the major centers we have our office.
It's called?
Global Business Solutions.
Global Business Solutions. Yeah. All right. So you go broader than so what?
So exactly? we already compliant. So effectively, we labor law. It's we started out, cut our teeth. We also started off as a very small business with a little business in Umtata. Everything I owned, myself and my wife, fitted in a little car, and we battled off to Umtata in 1989. And I was actually a financial consultant. We talked about that in the beginning. I was actually in financial services. And then I stumbled onto labor law when the Transkei erupted in 1989 with all those riots. And I think that's the issue with business people. You've got to be flexible. And then we started the labor law practice, and we do compliance. So board-based black economic empowerment, employment equity, skills development, all that kind of compliance stuff is what we do. So I've got great empathy for Ryan and small businesses, because I'm looking forward to the next half an hour, because it's one of my passions, small businesses and how they start. And the cost of compliance. The cost of compliance is a big issue for me.
It is. Oh.
And I represent business at the NEDLAC function, at the NEDLAC, a lot of the NEDLAC negotiations in those particular forums. And we're very cognizant of small business.
But do we have enough representation there?
Well, again, I think, you know, if you look at SACI, the South African Chamber, effectively is representation through there. But the real question is participation in forums, because all the stuff requires time.
Yeah.
So I've got to ask Ryan to spend some time representing and resources. And I think as business, we need to get much more representative. We need to get much more geared in respect of representativity. And unless you resource your chambers properly, you're not going to get the desired representativity.
Okay, we get more practical in the next half hour. Quick break now, but Ryan Tucker of RM Tucker Attorneys, he's been in the studio before, but not as a guest, as a sort of an audience member. And today we're going to talk to him about his career when he started it. What's it like being a small attorney firm in a world of brands? Okay,
yep.
It's like having your own family restaurant in a world of brands again. So stay with us. CliffCentral.com.